Welcome to the Productivity Podcast. Delighted today to be joined by an ex-colleague of mine at Boots and at Focus DIY, Paul Starbuck. Hi, Paul.
Hiya, how are you?
Yeah, good. We go back quite a way, don't we, in terms of Boots and Focus, and have kept in touch ever since. So always good to hear your dulcet tones and catch up with you.
Thank you, yes, likewise.
So now in the world, you've set up your own business, so Paul Starbuck and Associates, in your exec coaching mentoring space.
That's right, yes.
Before that, just for those people that may not be familiar with you, do you want to give us a quick kind of career bio of what you've done, where you've been, and how you got to where you are today?
Yeah, of course. Yeah, brilliant. Yeah, no, thank you. And hello to your listeners. Background, so 35 years in retail healthcare. Started my career with Tesco, worked my way through the Tesco system, then moved on to work for Iceland. I went down to London to open their convenience store format. And then moved on to Focus, which is where you and I met, of course, Simon. 3 years with Focus, and then joined the senior leadership team at Boots, and was really looking at Boots. I had the opportunity to go do lots of different types of work. So I did a HR role, operation, property, finance, risk, loss, and got involved in quite a lot of the big change programs, big people change programs, cultural change programs, even some technology stuff, actually. So it was quite good. Had the opportunity to become a non-exec director, which I thoroughly enjoyed. Different type of work, different industry altogether as well. But then at the back end of 2019, I embarked upon my own portfolio career transition. So I do quite a bit of consultant work, particularly in the COVID space, working with a bunch of very clever scientists out of Cambridge University that have developed Europe's first saliva PCR product that is now starting to emerge in some retail outlets. But my main passion, my main interest is around exec coaching. And I just love working with people. Even as a field leader, I love working and developing my own team to go off and fill their own career aspirations. So I guess it was no surprise in some respects that I found my way into executive coaching and mentoring.
So a really varied journey in terms of some of the stuff you've done across the years, some good experience, certainly. I know we met back again at Boots, and you were out in the field, and then you were in the centre, and then you were doing some other crazy stuff. So good rounded experience. But today we're going to focus on one of your passions and a job you've done a number of times for a number of organisations, which is that whole field leadership piece, whether it be called area manager, regional manager, divisional manager, different names and different levels in that field hierarchy for different organisations. But that similarity of kind of being accountable for lots of things, but not really having a place to live. So you're out in the field, you'll be visiting stores and all kind of thing. In my notes for this, I actually wrote pulled all over the place. That, I suppose, having worked closely with people in that role in various organisations and as Rethink, whether I'm an area manager, a regional manager, divisional manager, I seem to be pulled into the central stuff and a sounding board for things that are happening, pulled into my stores or factories or distribution centres, whatever I'm managing. So I'm a fountain of knowledge, but actually everybody wants a bit of my time and wants me to be something to them because I'm an expert in everything. So I see lots of them being pulled in 5 or 6, 7 or 8 directions, and I suppose sometimes not having the time or clear space to think about what's important to them and what are the right things to do to help them be successful, and therefore their primary focus, their teams. I know you've been thinking about it as well in terms of some key things that you think make successful field leadership. If we start with, I think, probably one of the primary ones on the list, which is around expectation setting. Mm. Why was that kind of high on your priority list? What makes it important in your work you do now and when you've done the role?
I think when you move into the field role, because you're not in those particular stores or those locations, you know, this field leadership is the same no matter what industry you're in, I guess. If you're managing remotely and managing teams of people, you have to set the context. You have to set the parameters in which others can work within. A phrase that I've often used is that freedom in a framework. So if you set the parameters, what is allowed, what is not allowed, I guess, in some respects, but you know, giving leaders the freedom to operate their business in their way, but with some level of framework around them so that they operate within the rules, you know, so to speak. So that'll be, yes, there'll be company rules, yes, there'll be, you know, process, procedures, disciplines that they must adhere to as part of their role. But I think this is more how they do things, you know, that ability to do their role in their own way. for the benefit of the organization, for the benefit of their people, of course, and most importantly, the benefit of their customers. So that expectation, that clarity, that crystal clear, you know, people all know where those boundaries are, and they know the consequences for moving across those boundaries. Yeah, I think that's quite important, particularly in the early days of being setting up a team or becoming a field leader of a particular team. You know, people are looking at you to answer all their questions. And sometimes it's not about answering the questions. Sometimes it's about helping them think for themselves and think about the things they need to go and do. Think about how they can help themselves answer their own questions. So, you know, one of the things you just talked about there was that whole delegation piece, you know, because you do get pulled from pillar to post as a field leader, the ability to delegate and get other people to do some of that stuff, maybe as part of their own individual development, as well as just creating some space for you as the field leader to better do the work you need to do. I think that's quite important.
So if it was a football team, because we both like football, we won't dwell too much on it because you're a Man United fan, and yeah. I suppose you're quite happy with how Liverpool are doing at the moment, but that's a whole different podcast. You've kind of set the formation, or the company have set the formation, and the goals are quite clear, but actually how you move within that formation and flow is down to the individuals, but there's actually a structure and a framework around it. Is that a good simile?
Yeah, I think that's absolutely spot on. I think at the start of the game, everybody's in their formation. You know, whatever the formation is, there's rigor around it, there's discipline around it. Everybody knows their role and know what happens. Once you're winning, once you've scored a goal or two, then that flexibility, that movement, that, you know, people go off and being themselves and being more creative in their play, I think is most definitely the kind of stuff I'm thinking about. Yeah, that's important. I think you have to give people the space to do the job the way in which they want to do the job, and not necessarily being dictated to around, you must do this, you must do that. Yes, there needs to be some control, some rigor, but I think it needs to be done in within a framework is the phrase I would use.
Yeah, so that expectation is vitally important. What else appears on your list for successful field leadership?
Well, I think the point you made at the start of the podcast, you know, being organised is essential. You have to be very disciplined, very organised, very controlled. You know, there are certain things that you have to do as a field leader, meetings you have to go to, conference calls, that type of stuff, reports, members, that type of stuff. So you have to put in, you have to be very well organized, very disciplined in some of that as well. It is, of course, you know, these retail and hospitality, other sectors are 7-day-a-week businesses, and you can't be working or can't be accessible 7 days a week. You can, but of course, that's eating into your own time, and you're not looking after yourself in that kind of way. So you have to set up the structure across your region, across your area, so that you have that flexibility to do the things that you need to do, but be organized to make sure everything takes place. You know, all the information you've been asked for, all the reports you've been asked to produce, you don't necessarily have to do them all yourself, but you need to be in control of it all to make sure that things are happening. So that being organized is important. And of course, if you're delegating some of this stuff out, you have more flexibility, which I think goes hand in hand with this. If you're a busy field leader doing lots and lots and lots of stuff, and then you're given another request, you know, to produce something else, then it always becomes a little bit more of a challenge because you don't necessarily have that flexibility. It's always important, I think, to delegate out. So there is something around, you know, planning your time around the things you have to do personally, the things you should do personally, and then some of the nice to do stuff that's not necessarily important in the running of your geography. You know, you just need to be careful about what you get sucked into and what you don't get sucked into. So there is something around that organisation piece, I think, that's quite important as a field leader.
And it's interesting because clearly the last 12 months have been atypical, but there's been a lot of talk across kind of certainly retail press, hospitality press, around mental health and wellness. And we'll see what comes out the back of this kind of lockdown period in terms of if there's a rise or spike in that in the next 12 to 18 months. But it's a really interesting point that information, certainly to those types of roles, is cascaded, bombarded all the time. So texts, emails, in certain organizations we probably both worked in, there's this tendency to copy everybody in. So there's something that'll happen and I'll copy all the field team in, because somebody in the centre, well, I've told everybody then, I've kind of covered my back, or I've communicated it just by the fact I've copied them in. So yeah, there must be a real challenge maybe coming out the back of the last 12 months and prior to that and moving forward for these types of roles not to become all consumed with sitting in front of the telly at night and trying to answer all the emails because they've been out all day getting all these requests. So yeah, I really, really buy into that prioritizing time. But I think for some people that might be really difficult because they feel like they're always on the clock, if that makes sense, and having to respond to everything and all the things they're copied in for, what's for information, what's for action. So it must be a real key skill. Otherwise, I suppose there's a tendency you just get overwhelmed with the volume of information that's presented to you.
Yeah, too right. I mean, it is relentless at times. The amount of information you are having to assimilate. I remember doing a piece of work a few years ago on just how much information came in, and we worked out that it would take you literally something like 2 full days to read everything you needed to read in a standard week. Well, clearly, as a field leader, I don't want to invest 2 full days reading everything that is sent to me. So you have to be purposeful. You have to be clever about how do you get the right access to the right information at the right time. That copying in of, you know, to everybody of everything. Well, you know, with a great suspect, you know, once I've read the first paragraph and I've read the last paragraph, I've probably got the gist of it, you know. And if there's something I think that is in that, if that particular piece of communication I think is more relevant to myself or the team, then I'll probably delegate it to say, you know, hey, can you have a look at this for me, and can you work out what we perhaps ought to be doing in this context. So it's just thinking about how do I keep myself as free as possible, making sure that I do the things I need to do for sure as in my particular role, but how do I create the flexibility to invest the right time doing the right stuff? There's only the, you know, as a regional manager, you can only do the role of a regional manager. If I start doing the job of the administrator, or start doing the job of a store manager or a general manager or the jobs of people in the head office, you know, I become less effective in their work. So fundamentally, do the job you're paid to do, I think, is probably the advice I'd use.
Yeah, I like that one. Okay, so that's good. What else appears on the list?
I think this is important. Just picking up the point you made there, that the regular check-ins, regular meetings, I think is really important. Keeping teams connected, I think, is vital, and particularly nowadays. You know, we've got into the habits of video calls, that type of stuff. Nothing beats a good face-to-face meeting with a bunch of retailers or you know, different sectors. You know, getting together and just working through and being really clear about the priorities. There's been times in my career where I've tried to do things in a slightly different way. So Christmas is always a good one. You know, Christmas, the focus becomes less about the structure, project work, that type of stuff, becomes much more about trading. Christmas in retail is such good fun. It really is. You haven't got those distractions, so you're in our stores all the time. But of course, you want all of your team and all of your leaders to be in store more of the time over the Christmas period to make sure you support the team, support your customers. So we've tried to have the times, those occasions where we said, okay, we'll have no meeting in December. But in every single time I've tried to do that, you suddenly find that what you get is a bit of fracas, a bit of loss of continuity around some particular topics, or some miscommunication, or just the team just doesn't quite necessarily sit as tight as it always has been throughout the year. It's a pressured time, of course, because, you know, it's busy and there's sky-high expectations of numbers and performance and all that type of stuff. Everybody wants to do the right thing for customers at that period of time. So I've always maintained that actually a regular kind of get together, regroup, focus, almost, I guess, in some respects, for some people, it's just kind of like de-stress. You're just kind of like relax, have a day invested in, right, what are the things that are important? What's important for us right now that we need to kind of nip in the bud and work through pretty quickly? What's coming up that we need to be thinking about a month, 2, 3, 4, 5 months ahead, 6 months ahead, a year ahead in the development of a whole region, a whole team? So that, yeah, purposeful check-ins, I think, is really important, really, really important. And, you know, some people need more than others. Extroverts, for example, they tend to want more of that kind of check-in. Being a field leader is quite a lonely role, really. You pole up at a store, you know, they don't really want to see you because they're like, oh my God, you know, what am I going to hit with today? You know, even if you are welcomed and well received and all that kind of stuff, you know, you're then back into a car or onto a train or something like that. So it can be quite a lonely life, actually. So, yeah, particularly when you're managing groups of field teams, you actually that team spirit is, I think, is dead important, and therefore regular meetings, regular check-ins, that way to keep that team spirit, to keep that energy, to keep that continuity, I think is quite important.
Yeah, and I always think it's important to kind of get out the environment as well. So to get some perspective, to reflect, to, again, meet your peers and bounce ideas off, you know, what's worked well, what are you struggling with? Everyone will have a gripe about something or other, but actually if someone's managed a great way through it or found a different way through it, can you learn off them? So I always found them a good place to kind of probably dump some baggage of, well, this has been rubbish, but, you know, we've just got to do it, move on. But also to hear from other people of, actually, I might not have done that yet. You've just helped me think about that in a different way, do it quicker, faster, more effectively, better for the customer, whatever it is. Yeah. But once you're out of those four walls, because managing, if we take a retail store, you do get sucked into that four-wall environment, sometimes gives you more perspective. And actually, we're not as far behind as we thought, or we're not as far in front as we thought. So I always found them really useful, as well as the whole cascade piece that comes with it.
Yeah, no, definitely. Learning from each other and bouncing off each other, I think, is an important part of being part of an effective team. It really is.
And it must help as well, because managers, certainly if we, again, back to our retail days, managers would come and go within areas, regions, divisions. So again, a good way of getting to know them and finding out what they're about and them learning about the rest of the team. So I always thought it was a good way for new people to kind of familiarize themselves with the team, but also for, you know, you to say, look, if you ever need anything, give us a call, or I used to run that store and, you know, are those people still there? They're great. Or here's a couple of watch outs, whatever.
Yeah, for sure. And it also helps with that freedom in the framework and just kind of reinforcing that. So, you know, where you see things that aren't necessarily within that framework, or you want to push people to the boundaries of that framework, you want to stretch people's thinking, you know, they've been in that team spirit is a great way to just generally keep the team motivated, excited, purposeful in their approach to the work that we're doing.
And an opportunity probably on your list to have a bit of fun, maybe celebrate some success, because whatever environment you work in, there's always the next thing to do, the next project's coming up, the next pieces of change. Sometimes celebrating success, if you're an extrovert, you like it. If you're an introvert, probably maybe not so much, in front of a group of people, and also having a bit of fun. So maybe a team evening, go, I don't know, go-karting down the pub, whatever it might be, must also play into some of that thinking of getting people together.
Oh gosh, yeah, absolutely, absolutely. It doesn't matter how good your performance is. Celebrating the stuff that's going really well, an individual's performance within that, I think, is also important to celebrate. So it's not just the team celebration of a team result. It's also, you know, who are the people in the team that are really doing well, and recognizing that amongst their peers that they're doing really well, and that celebrating that is really, really important. And then, yeah, the fun element of it, you know, work is tough, or work can be tough. Taking the time out to continue to build relationships, have some fun, do some social stuff. It's all an important part of building a highly successful team. It's that ability to bond together, you know, in the good times and in the bad times, just to make sure that everybody's moving forward.
Yeah, and it'll be interesting, again, not to dwell too much on the kind of lockdown period, but a lot of that stuff will have become virtual, which is fine and fits with the rules that were allowed at the time. But it'd be interesting to see the impact of that. You know, has it sustained those highly successful, high performing teams? Actually, has it dropped off? Are people doing their emails, or, you know, doing something else as they're on the Zoom or Teams call? So it'd be interesting to see if there's a big swing back to more of those team events, team engagement sessions, where actually it's about whatever the rules allow at the time, being physically together in a place. There is something, and I don't know if you've seen it, but I spend a lot of time on kind of virtual meetings. You do miss that kind of glance around the room to check in with, is everybody on the same page, or the person that, you know, maybe is frowning, or visually giving away something that says they are engaged in it or aren't, you kind of lose all that stuff. And they tend to be, from the ones I've been in, a lot more formal. There'll be a bit of chat as you're waiting for everybody to come in, and then it's like, right, we're here, off we go. And then at the end, everybody's kind of like, bye, gone. So you kind of lose the top and tail. So a bit I just wanted to pick up on there. So we've talked about having fun. We've talked about celebrating success for the team and individuals. It's been really important. How do you stop as a successful field leader being pulled into spending all your time managing, let's call it, poor performance? So if I've got 12 stores, there's two which are poor performing. Maybe that's personal performance of leadership team in there. How do you stop yourself spending lots of time in there to fix it, and almost you neglect the people that are superstars who feel a bit abandoned?
Yeah, it's a really good question. I think in my career, I've always worked on the notion of always know who your weakest link or two or three are, and then be conscious in your leadership about what you're doing to support them. Sure, the those that are struggling, I would go and spend more time with them, for sure. You know, typically they would see me at least every month, if not a couple of times in every month. You know, depending upon how many stores they are, the geography, all that kind of stuff. But they would see me more often, perhaps, than some of the better performers. And that wasn't because I necessarily didn't respect or love or appreciate the performance of the great people. I'd have to work incredibly hard to make sure that they had that reassurance and they knew that they were doing really well. That celebration in the team, they would get a lot of that recognition for their contribution, their performance in there. But you're only as good as your weakest link. It's a bit like a football analogy. You know, if your left back's not very good, then the opposing team is going to focus on, let's attack down the left, down that side, because that's the weakest part of the team, and therefore it's where our opportunities come from. Well, it's no different, I think, in managing big teams. You know, you are effectively only as good as your weakest link, and being conscious of that, and conscious about what are you doing to develop those individuals or support those individuals. And it doesn't necessarily need to be about what I'm doing either. You know, if you've got a big team and some brilliant performers, part of the stretch of a team and part of the dynamics of a team is just thinking about, well, if I've got some superstars and those superstars are on the trajectory to go and fulfill their career aspirations by taking on bigger responsibilities and bigger roles, then, well, how can they help some of the ones that are struggling? Particularly some of the newer ones, you know, some that have been promoted to perhaps their first general manager role for the first time, or first store manager role, you know, particularly some of those ones that are coming through the system. You know, how can you use the better performance to support the weaker ones? But if you've got a performance issue, you've got to be conscious and purposeful about it, because everybody in the team will be looking at you as the team leader to say, we know this person's struggling, what are you going to do? What's your approach to it? What are you going to do about the fact that person's struggling? And sometimes you have to make some really tough choices. Sometimes you have to say, well, actually, this individual is holding us back, isn't responding to the support they're being offered or given. And therefore, you have to make a big decision. You have to say, well, actually, it's not working out for us. We need to find a different solution for this relationship, for the work that you're contributing to the business. And they are tough decisions. They are very, very tough decisions. And of course, you know, you're very visible as a team leader. Everybody around you sees you know, the jungle drum, so to speak, start drumming away, and, you know, the stories come out, all that kind of stuff. But you have to be very professional. You have to be very disciplined. Take all the emotion out of it, all the kind of personal stuff out of it. It becomes all about, how do I best support this individual to be the best they can be? But for me as a leader, it was probably more about, well, how do I support the rest of the people around this individual? If they're struggling, then everybody in the store or everybody in that particular unit knows they're struggling. And therefore, well, how do we help them through that as well? And how do we help the end customer? Because if their store's not doing particularly well, then obviously there'll be a customer impact in some shape or form. So it's a very broad kind of piece, but actually it becomes all important in the decisions you make in supporting those individuals. So I think you're right. I think it is important that you are focusing and supporting those that are holding you back. But at the same time, you have to work just as hard to celebrate the ones that you're not seeing as often, that they're doing really well for the team overall.
Yeah, and I think that whole weakest thing can have a big impact on the rest of the team, because that's almost where the bar's set. if that's where the bar is and I'm achieving over, great, but actually I know I can fall that low, if that makes sense, without any repercussions. So if it just carries on and carries on, and whoever those weakest links are move, you know, downwards in the organization, out of the organization, to a different part of the organization, I think it gives the rest of the team a lot of reassurance that, you know, those standards will be maintained. There is some tolerance and support, but actually there comes a point when it just, like you said, it's not working for us. What are the other options? If it goes on and on and on, I think you really undermine that kind of first part of the conversation you talked about in the framework, because the frame, if you think of it as a picture, is almost getting bigger and bigger and bigger, and therefore the tolerances within that frame get bigger and bigger and bigger. So if you're at the top end, I think it's really important that people see people in the poor performance part of that organization, in that geography, being supported, and if that support ultimately doesn't work, moving into a role that's more suitable, because otherwise I think you just deflate the top of the team.
Yeah, that's exactly it. That's exactly it. The gap between the top end performance and the bottom end performance narrows as the better performers think, well, why should I bother stretching and performing and working really hard and producing some great results if we've got these people holding us back and dragging us back down as a team. So you're spot on. You're absolutely spot on. That freedom in a framework works brilliantly well, but everybody needs to know what the expectation is. Everybody needs to know where the standard sits. And that framework, therefore, is important. So at team meetings, on store visits, on every opportunity you have, it's important to just reflect on, well, where are we in the context of our overall team and overall team performance? There's something I always used to say to people: nip things in the bud. Nip things in the bud dead early. So it's easier if you see somebody struggling or starting to struggle, or some blank faces perhaps in a meeting, is go and have the conversation. What's going on? You know, I noticed in the meeting that you seem a bit distant. You know, what's going on for you? And start to dig into things, start to listen and ask and probe to see what's going on. And on store visits, you know, going to probe and going to talk with the rest of the people in the store, you know, I'd consciously go and talk to as many people on a visit as I possibly could, because you learn a lot from them about how they've been managed, how they've been led, what's the culture like inside the organization, how their own individual framework is being administered for them personally. I'd go talk to some customers, you know, get some feedback from them, get a sense of what is the quality of the leadership inside this unit. And therefore, nipping things in the bud, you know, early doors, you know, just being really clear about, you know, your performance over the last few weeks has just dropped off a little bit. What's going on? What's going on for you right now? It's amazing. You nipping those things in the bud, just bringing things to attention is a great way of just making sure the whole team continues to move forward. If you don't do that, of course, the problems just fester. And once they start to fester and grow and evolve and become more complicated, they are more difficult, therefore, to manage, more time-consuming to manage, more problematic. It is easier to take one deep breath and manage one situation really well that might send shockwaves around the whole region or the whole division or wherever, but at least you've managed and dealt with a particular situation, a particular issue. It's a lot easier to nip these things in the bud, for sure.
Yeah, no, I agree. And we'll finish on this final point. I know you've got a big list, and I think this one's really, really important. So resisting the urge to micromanage. I've seen it and experienced it. You probably have in yours, where someone will come and walk around your store and do a 4x4 walk and tell you you've got a missing label here and a dirty tin of paint top there. That always felt kind of like that's my job. I'll sort that out. What's the bigger stuff we can do?
Yeah, that's for sure. And you see it at every level inside an organization. Somebody can spot a missing shellfish label from, you know, the car park and make a big deal out of it. And yeah, it's important. It's an important detail. Retail is detail, and some of that stuff is important. But ultimately, I think resisting that urge to micromanage is really important, actually, I think, to building successful teams. If I'm doing that, if I'm highlighting the tickets that are missing, that's not really my job. Store manager, yeah, the book stops there for sure. They should see some of that stuff, but it's probably not store manager's role either. You know, there'll be people around it. There'll be other department managers or other individuals in the store whose role it is. So for me, it comes back to that freedom in the framework. It comes back to the, well, how are you running your store? How are you running your units if we're not quite getting that detail right, that basics, I guess, in some respects, how we're not getting that right. So there's a fine line, I think. I think if you find one missing ticket, then you find one missing ticket. If you find a whole load of missing tickets, well, that's a different ballgame. That's more around how that store is being led, how the routines, the disciplines, the processes are working inside that store. So I think that becomes a bigger issue. I think that's probably something I'd want to get involved, because I'd be saying, well, what's going on? You know, how are we missing so many of these basics? What, talk me through how you're managing this, how you're leading this with your team, what's going on right now, and how can I help you with this? But I think the micromanaging is really important, because I think when you move from a general manager into an area manager or a regional manager or something like that, when you take on your first position, you want to be the store manager of every store. It's not your job. Your job is to be the area manager or the regional manager, whatever that first level of line leadership is. That's the job you have to practice. So if you want to go around and be the store manager for 15 stores, that's great. The store managers will let you do that, for sure. They really will. But actually, the job you're asked to do and the job you're paid to do is that of the first level of leadership, or the second level of leadership, managing geography, managing remote teams. And I think it becomes more important to practice that role, to practice that work. What are the things I need to do in that role? I think if I look back on my career, Simon, I think probably the hardest transition I ever made was from that of a general assistant to a trainee manager in the same store. That was hard. You know, at the age of 18 years old, all of a sudden I'm in charge of supervisors and people and all this kind of stuff. I'm like, oh my gosh, all these people are all older than me. That was quite a difficult transition in the same store. The second biggest challenging move was that moving from a single site leadership role into a multi-site leadership role, because it's a different role. Yes, you're leading people. Yes, you're managing people, but the remoteness of that leadership is very different to what you're used to doing inside a single unit. And therefore, it is important, I think, to take the time to learn how to do that role. Your role is not to be the single site manager looking after loads of stores. It's different. And you have to break free of that. You have to sort of unlearn some of the things you would learn, and picking up on things like tickets and that type of stuff is perhaps what you would do as a general manager or a store manager, perhaps. I think as a general manager, if I were to pick that up, I think I'd be going back around the department manager saying, what's going on here, you know, because that's not really their job either. So you are having to unpick and unlearn a previous job and then relearn and put together and make important the things that you need to do as a field leader. And that becomes more about context, about that framework, about development, you know, that pipeline of individuals coming along to fulfill their potential, the whole succession planning piece. There's much more of a time frame to it as well. So in a single unit, you're probably looking at this week, this month. As a field leader, you're probably looking at, well, the next 6 months perhaps, or the next year. The whole context of the role and the work that you do changes, and you are therefore the interface and between the stores piece and the company piece. So working in collaboration with different parts of the organization for the mutual benefit of the stores, the customers, that's more about the role that it becomes. So yeah, that micromanaging something, I think you called it out right. I think it's bang on. You've got to do the job you pay to do first and foremost, and therefore if you're micromanaging, I think you're doing the wrong job.
No, I agree. And on that note, we'll pause there, Paul. If people want to get in touch with you for a further conversation to find out a bit more about what you're doing, the exec coaching, the mentoring, where's the best place for them to do that?
Well, I'm available on LinkedIn. So that's there. I've got a website, paulstarbuckassociates.com. And more information on there, and then you find my telephone number there, all that kind of stuff. And even a link to my calendar if you want to book in some time to have a bit of a catch up and a bit of a chat. That'd be great.
Perfect. Listen, it's been great to catch up. I really enjoyed this one. It's kind of brought back some memories of some of our time together, and I think we've had some similar experiences as well. So really appreciate your time for coming on, and we'll catch up soon.
Lovely. Thank you, Simon. Really appreciate it. Thank you very much.